now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. A lot of these people that have all these abilities, who have celestial star ancestry, they're operating not only throughout this cosmos, but in higher planes, and they're working against the Draco Empire. Photonic energy and the cosmic rays will activate our higher centers. And it's incumbent upon us to ride that frequency wave. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to Bartley's Commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. Today, in the first half, I will talk about what's been going on with the Cosmic Switchboard website. We've been making adjustments in order to provide better service, better sound. We've got new recording software. We've bought new microphones. We have had interference at a number of levels. There seems to be an AI component, but we're getting a handle on it, and we know that in the future we're going to be putting out more great information, and the quality of the sound will be much better. So thank you so much, our dear listeners, for bearing with us and letting us work through these teething problems and, you know, hanging in there with us. We really appreciate it, and we have loyalty to you. General Patton always talked about the importance of top-down loyalty, that you know, the authoritarians always want people to obey the diktats and look up to and obey without question those that were delegated as their so-called superiors, which the whole concept of superiors is a joke. And by saying that, in no way do we feel superior to anybody out there. In fact, we're humbled that so many of you come to our website and come to our dedicated YouTube channel to get this kind of information. And we feel a loyalty to you, and we will do everything we can to continue to provide you this top-level information. I did put a note on the Cosmic Switchboard website, our interview with Sandra Fecht and her two colleagues, Dave Staffen and Fran Toes, has been delayed till the end of this week due to some technical issues, but the interviews are fine. When you hear them, you will be impressed by the caliber of information. Many of you are familiar with Sandra Fecht's work. She is a therapist in the Ontario region, and over time, she began working with all these people who were reporting satanic ritual abuse and mind control issues, as well as reporting shape-shifting reptilians, right? David Icke talks about how he had a discussion one time with a woman. I believe the organization was Mothers Against Ritual Abuse or something like that. And the lady asked David, why do so many people report that people shapeshift into lizard creatures in these ceremonies? Words to that effect. Well, you know, we know why, basically. So, long story short, Sandra Fecht did the right thing. She did some background research when she kept getting these reports, and someone advised her to read David Icke's books, and she came across, I think it was Children of the Matrix. Oh, no, it was The Biggest Secret. And she read the book, and then she was blown away because so many of the things that David Icke had talked about is what she had heard firsthand from her clients. And so she had no choice but to, as David Icke says, go with where the information leads, right? Unlike so many people out there, especially in quackademia, that they flee in horror when it comes to information that conflicts with the official narrative, right? So many lies still left over from decades past that are coloring and pushing and driving the narrative today. So anyway, coming up at the end of this week will be Sandra Fecht and two of her former clients, Dave Staffen and Fran Toes, and you can see videos of Fran Toes, T-O-E-W-S, and Dave Staffen, Staffen, on YouTube, where they talk about their experiences and they talk about their work on certain healing modalities. So it's very important to tune into this upcoming show because Sandra, Dave Staffen, and Fran Toews talk a lot about healing and also talk a lot about the importance of energetic healing and frequency healing. Because a lot of therapists out there that do work with SRA survivors and MC clients, mind control survivor clients, they completely omit the energetic aspect to healing and working with survivors of SRA and MC. It's not even in the equation as far as they're concerned. They may work with healing people from the physical trauma and the psychological, emotional trauma, but they completely leave out of the equation the energetic frequency manipulation. And that is a key aspect to this, and I will talk more about this in a moment, because as my late great mentor Barbara Bartolik always emphasized, there is an energetic, emotional harvesting aspect to this, as well as a manipulation of frequency and a manipulation of the meridians, the chakra points, energetic harvesting, energetic manipulation. So that's a key point to remember. Another one of our guests coming up is Sashita. Sashita, S-A-C-H-I-T-A, has had reptilian and military experiences. She's been in the underground reptilian bases and has seen a lot of their culture, understands a lot of what makes them tick, and has seen their operations firsthand. Some of the things she describes briefly in passing have been described by the likes of Carla Turner and Barbara Bartholik decades ago. There are some people out there that chirp and make all these chirping noises. Oh, Bartley, all he does is hang on to the coattails of these dead people, these dead women, Barbara Bartholik and Dr. Carla Turner. You know what? You guys are worthless and weak. If that's the best you can do, just you're a joke. And the fact of the matter is, you're on the losing side and you're empty vessels. I will always, always edify the work of Barbara Bartholik and Dr. Carla Candy Turner because they were the pioneers. Barbara talked about the crank meth agenda. She talked about the reptilian overlordship. She talked about the hybridization of humans and reptilians producing all these evil, sadistic people out there in society, causing all this mayhem and all this strife and all this suffering, while the rest of the abduction field was still wallowing in the gray areas of the David Jacobs work and the Bud Hopkins work, grays, grays, and more grays, what I call the gray areas of alien abduction research. Dr. Carla Turner and her mentor, Barbara Bartholik, were at the forefront. So I will always edify them because they were the pioneers. They were at the spear point. They were doing the work that needed to be done. Barbara worked in the shadows for years, working with countless alien abductees as a cosmic combat medic, working with these people, healing them, helping them to reintegrate, bringing joy and laughter back into their lives. Dr. Carla Turner, her first and foremost protege, who inspired me and countless others, was at the forefront of the MyLab research. Not only the hardcore alien abduction research and reptilian research she learned from Barbie, but she became a pioneer in her own right about MyLabs. Her book, Candy Turner's book, Taken, Inside the Alien Abduction Syndrome, I think it's called, chronicled the lives of 8 women who had MyLab experiences. These are legitimate alien abductees who also had MyLab experiences. One of the women is from Puerto Rico, and if you want to get an idea of the kind of stuff that's still going on in Puerto Rico, listen to my interview with the great Puerto Rican investigator, Jorge Martin Miranda. Barbie and Candy were at the forefront, and I will always edify them because they showed the way. They were the way showers. They were the pioneers. They were the trailblazers. While everyone else was stuck in the gray areas or stuck in the New Age, New Cage movement. Completely unpopular at the time, Barbie and Candy were at the forefront. Bud Hopkins used to say dismissively when people would ask him about reptilians, oh, the lizards. Ask Barbara Bartholik about that. She knows about the lizards, right? The lizards are at the top of the heap as far as most of the alien abduction operations are concerned. The Draco, the winged Draco, particularly the white Draco, and there have been some people who have talked about the white Draco. Ken Bakeman has talked about the white Draco. If anyone is in comms with Ken Bakeman, please let him know that I would love to have him on my show to interview him. So, once again, when we talk about the energetic aspects of alien abductions, the matrix, the larger matrix control system, energy frequency resonance has everything to do with it. That's why we're getting hammered by the, and now they're going to roll out the 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi points. So pretty soon we're going to be surrounded by 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi points, right? That's overkill. We don't need that much power to operate and to utilize digital devices. But they want to feed this artificial intelligence that's all around us. And one of the ways they're doing that is by pumping out 5 gigahertz worth of this negative discordant frequency bandwidth. And as far as the whole concept of hosting and shapeshifting are concerned, long before people started talking about shapeshifting, long before it became a word in common usage, Barbara Bartholik was already working with people who shapeshifted right in front of her. People that were reptilian abductees that were on meth, crank is a derivative of meth, right in her own living room, which I've sat in. These people would shapeshift right before her eyes, and then this unearthly, deep, like hissy kind of voice would come out of these people and threaten all kinds of mayhem to Barbie. And folks, hardly anyone out there will know exactly what Barbie went through, the attacks that she went through. On one occasion, this very heavy glass table levitated in front of her and then dropped to the ground and shattered into thousands of little shards, something that's completely impossible under normal circumstances. Even if something was levitated and dropped, you would see, like, some of the glass would break off, big shards here and there, but it wouldn't shatter into countless little pieces. I mean, it's weird enough that the thing levitates on its own and then levitates and then drops at Barbie's feet and shatters into all these pieces. On another occasion, one of her labors of love, her and her husband Bob were restoring this yacht. They found this yacht somewhere. Bob was really into going to places, finding scrap metal, and turning them into works of art. He was really artistic. Both of them were, actually. They had their own art gallery for a while. And so somehow or another, they came across an old beaten-up yacht, and they spent months and months and months restoring this thing, probably years restoring this thing. And just as it was on the verge of being finished and becoming seaworthy, Barbie and Bob were away. I think they were at their art gallery, or they were in town for some function or something. They lived in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And what happens, as related to them by their neighbor, was it two or was it three flying saucers hovered over this yacht, which they had been lovingly restoring, and then they directed energy at it, set it on fire, and burned it up, okay? These kind of things don't happen to Bud Hopkins. These kind of things don't happen to frauds like Donald Marshall, okay? These kinds of things happen to real players like Barbie and Candy because they were at the forefront, right? They were at the spear point. They were pioneers. They were trailblazers. They were the recon scouts doing a CTR, close target recce, of the enemy base. That's what they were doing. So all these detractors out there, go ahead and keep, you know, spewing bile. It just makes me laugh to think that so many of you out there, all you worthless and weak trolls, you go into a mouth-foaming rage because you're not even going to get off the starting blocks. Your comments are not going to be included. You're not going to be able to spew out your hate and your vitriol because nobody wants it. and you're going to be recycled. So there, you're going to be recycled, and the last laugh is on you, because you're on the losing side. So there. And about the crank agenda and the meth agenda too, that's another energetic aspect of this, folks, because, and you've heard me talk about this before, but it bears repeating, because now we have an ICE epidemic, right? It, you know, freebasing wasn't enough. The CIA crack cocaine Contra epidemic, that wasn't enough. And now they got to come up with something called ICE. I have no idea what it really is. It just, all I know is it's another methamphetamine that drives people crazy and et cetera, et cetera. So now there's an ICE epidemic that's being pushed. What methamphetamine does is it changes the frequency. Not only does it change the DNA of the users, that's bad enough, but it changes the resonant frequency into a lower frequency bandwidth that allows all these negative entities to jump without parachutes to get into these people, right? Like, I remember I was living in San Diego. San Diego is a big tweaker place, folks. That whole Southern California, Southwest area, the Southern California Basin, the greater Southwest desert in general is Tweakerville, USA, right? And Barbie was always talking about how what the entities would do would be they would, once the meth had taken hold of these people and they were in that resonant frequency bandwidth, these entities would jump into these people. And these are people that don't even have, you know, a person may not even have much DNA, reptilian DNA. We all have reptilian DNA to one degree or another. But some, you know, of these meth users who had no previous predisposition to being taken up as a host, right? Now, to be sure, somewhere along the way, circumstances, the way the matrix works, bad association put into their personal experience, maybe OCD thought loops, externally induced thoughts coming in, encouraging them to use meth, whatever the case may be, somehow or other they got on meth, and in short order, they got taken up as a host. And what happens is, the entities that take people up as hosts through the medium of meth abuse, these are really wicked, vile creatures. And they wreak out all kinds of mayhem. I mean, I remember the story of this Mexican-American couple in East County, San Diego, another meth capital. They did horrific things to their niece. The woman had a niece, her sister's daughter, and I'm not even going to recount what these two tweakers did to the poor baby, but they showed them on local San Diego news being arraigned on TV, and they showed close-ups of them, and man, lights are on, but nobody's home. You just look into the eyes of these people, and you just see they are entity infested, and I've talked about this before. You probably heard about me talking about this in interviews and whatnot, but one of Barbara's sources was this guy who was a headhunter in Silicon Valley. His job was to go out and find people to recruit them, to get them into a Silicon Valley firm. Anyway, this guy got into the meth, and before too long, he felt compelled to go onto the, you know, the kiddie porn sites on the internet. Before too long, the voices in her head were telling him to do these things, right? And then another guest, which you're going to be hearing from, Dr. Meshirel Manyfeathers, who I met at the Byron Bay Close Encounters Conference, but the only other hardcore researcher there, I might add. Anyway, most of the rest were fake light workers and New Age la-di-da's. But anyway, I had the great good fortune of meeting Dr. Meshirel Manyfeathers, and she talked about how the, you know, this whole energetic thing was a key component to it as well. She would find these people that were all hosty, and they had thoroughly infiltrated the elements of the New Age community she worked in, and she could see them because she had etheric third eye vision, and she'd see that these people in front of her talking about these love and light kind of things, she can see they were hosted by Dracos and reptilians, right? That's the irony of all this. And so, yeah, tune into that lecture too, that interview rather, because that's coming up. But getting back to Barbara Bartholik, she and Candy Turner confronted these issues head on. This is energetic matrix type stuff. This is what we're dealing with. And again, the commonality, Sandra Fecht, Marichelle Many Feathers, another guest coming up on the podcast, on the switch, as we call it for short. They emphasize the energetic aspect to this. Some of my previous guests, Naomi Swan, please listen to her interview, talks about the importance of clearing the energetic space around the physical heart and the heart center because it's blocked traumatic energy that needs to be removed safely to create more space for organic source to move back in, right? So we're emphasizing the energetic aspect to all this. If we want to break out of this matrix prison, we have to recognize the environment we're in, this electromagnetic soup that is all around us, that's altering our frequency, that's altering our DNA. And, you know, yet again, Barbie was at the forefront of that. And one of my other guests, Ashita, who I mentioned earlier, I didn't complete that thought. Well, forgive me for jumping around. Sashita mentions in passing what she's seen in the underground reptilian bases, right? And I didn't want her to elaborate. There's no reason to elaborate because all she has to do is mention, you know, some of the things in passing that she'd seen, which Barbie and Candy decades ago referred to as the processing plants. Okay, use your imagination. And Sashita has seen that. And many others have seen that too, folks, okay? This is what we're talking about here. The craft of intelligence is the art of determining the intentions and capabilities of an enemy or a potential enemy, right? Now, to be sure, the reptilians don't see us as enemies. They see us as chattel. They see us as livestock, right? We haven't, I guess, earned the exalted status of enemy yet, although many of the people out there, and some of you listening right now, some of my friends on the internet and, you know, cyberspace, they have been marked as enemies. They have been marked as enemies because of the latent potential threat they pose to the reptilian Draco overlordship. And with good reason that they have fear for these people, because that's what it amounts to. The reptilians and the Draco are the most fear-based entities in existence because they simply are unwilling to roll with the changes. They're so R-complex, they just want to continue doing the same parasitic thing over and over and over until the end of time. But time waits for no man, woman, or entity. These Draco and Reps, for once, at least since the last 30,000 years, are behind the eight ball, as I've said before. Oh, let me be one of the first to say, now that we're on the topic of reptilians, and lots of friends of mine have talked about how some of these hosty evil reptilian-human hybrids that are the plantation managers for this planet, how they may be off the karmic wheel. How they just do all this evil, and then they just get reincarnated into another body prepared for them that's reptilian Draco hybrid bloodline, and then they wind up becoming another evil person. And even if they're not in a position of power and influence, they still wind up being a narcissistic bung munch, ruining the life of somebody, children, spouses, partners, whatever the case may be. So in honor, or rather not in honor, how about... On the occasion of the demise of David Rockefeller, he finally carked it. I guess the seventh heart transplant just didn't work. The human heart rejected his lizard ass, right? So let me say, on the occasion of David Lizard Rockefeller finally carking it, remember he was the scion of the Rockefeller Standard Oil conglomerate. I mean, you'll pull into an intersection in America and all four service stations, gas stations on each corner is basically a Rockefeller-owned gas station, right? And then on top of that, he created his family created the tax-exempt foundations because the government went after him for his family for building these so-called trust, i.e. cartels. So what they did was they diffused a lot of their wealth, scattered it all around, and created all these tax-exempt foundations, which they used to provide grants. And that they basically created the modern medical mafia. They basically created the modern educational system, et cetera, et cetera. David Rockefeller himself created the Council on Foreign Relations, played a key role in the creation of the Trilateral Commission, along with Brzezinski. Anyway, on the occasion of David Rockefeller's passing, let me be the first to say, goodbye, dull care. Goodbye, dull care. Okay, now back to business. I'm going to be making an effort to get more and more people involved, people that you may not have heard their stories before. Up till now, they have been kind of working in the shadows, under the radar, and I've left the door open for them to be able to put out information at any level they're comfortable with, under a pseudonym, writing an article, doing like a soundbite blurb where they talk for a few or several minutes, and then I can intersperse that with a commentary or something along those lines, or a fully fledged interview. Some of you got a taste of that this past week with Carol, who is a dear friend of mine, and we will have Carol back again if she feels so inclined, this time for an entire 2 hours. I know a number of people who I've spoken to over the years, and some that I have not known that long, but I go a lot by impressions. I go by heart center energy. I go by what my heart, physical heart and my energetic heart tell me, and a lot of these people are really sincere. They have an important message to share. They're coming from a heart-centered perspective, which is key, because when one is heart-centered, that means they're connected to organic source. That means that, for example, their egos cannot be activated because they know that the ego is there just to help them to basically interface with this reality that we live in, as George Kavassalis points out, but that they cannot have their egos activated to turn into an out-of-whack ego, which further embeds people into the matrix simulation and further into the frequency bandwidth of the control system. And there's a lot of people out there that I've gotten to know over time. And like I said, some of them quite recently. And man, I say to myself, this is an extraordinary person. They're coming from a heart-centered perspective, and they're doing important work, and they're laboring in, you know, relative obscurity. And like so many of us that have been on this journey, we find ourselves doing all kinds of work, and at times it seems like we get no reward, we get no recognition. We're not in this for recognition, but it's good to be recognized by your peers. It's good to know that our efforts are not in vain, and that there are people that are truly appreciative of what we are doing. And each one of us has a piece of the puzzle. Some are very good at house clearing. They go around to places that are haunted by entities, or, you know, are having entity visitations. And then they go in there, they do their thing, and then they clear the house out. And then, you know, the family can go on living a normal life again. Other people, they're herbalists, nutritionists. Other people have an interesting perspective, having gone through all kinds of mystical, visionary, extraterrestrial, hyperdimensional experiences, and they're looking at things from a heart-centered, grounded, organic source perspective. And so I made a point of encouraging some of these people to come onto the show, like Carol, for example, and others like her, people that I've vetted and I know for a fact are legitimate and have integrity and coming from a place of authenticity and sincerity. So As time goes on, if everything works out, we'll be hearing from more people who have had MyLab experiences, more people that have had ET encounters, more people that are naturopaths and herbalists and into natural living and healthy living, et cetera, et cetera. I feel that it's a responsibility on my part to give these people an opportunity. And eventually, maybe they can have their own podcast. Maybe they can get a blog going, a video vlog going, whatever the case may be. Because while we still have the internet, while it's still here, and you look at all this fake crap going on, oh, the Russians hacked into, you know, the Clinton campaign's emails, et cetera, et cetera. All of that is just an excuse to just crack down on the internet. So while we have the opportunity, let's make the most of it, folks, because so many of you have an important story to tell. If for reasons of privacy, of OPSEC, operational security, maybe your family and friends are not ready for this, maybe they've been negative about you and your work and what you believe in and what you stand for, right? And remember, a person who doesn't stand for something will fall for anything. And that's the problem with so many of these TV news droolers, right? They just believe whatever they're told. It's just amazing. In an age of instantaneous communications and with information right at our fingertips, so many people just insist on staying chronically ignorant and chronically manipulated. So that being said, while we have the means, I encourage those of you that feel so inclined to, you know, start your own blog, start your own podcast, and if it'll make you more comfortable, use a pseudonym, a nom de guerre, right? Come up with some name, some pseudonym that fits you. And maybe sometime down the track, you can decide to just come out and, you know, with your real name and say, okay, that's me. That's me that was writing all those things under that pen name, under that pseudonym. And, you know, using pen names is an age-old tradition. There are some quite established authors in the history field that write under a number of pen names. I think I mentioned on the show before the Area 51 novels. Little did I know that the same author who wrote the Area 51 novels was the same guy who wrote the Dave Riley Green Beret Special Forces novels, which I always got a kick out of because this was before the bogus war on terror. And, you know, he was writing from the perspective of being ex-Special Forces himself and writing from the perspective of a team leader of an ODA, Operational Detachment Alpha, so-called A-teams. In theory, there's supposed to be 12 senior non-coms, each with, you know, two or more specialties and can train and lead and raise a battalion or more of Native irregulars, but seldom, if ever, do they have 12 senior NCOs in an ODA. Anyway, surprise, surprise, come to find out the same guy that writes the Dave Riley novels, Green Berets, is the same guy who wrote the Area 51 novels, if I'm not mistaken. So this whole idea of using pen names, using pseudonyms, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing inauthentic about that. So if that's what you need to do to be comfortable and to be able to get certain information out, by all means, do it. Here's why. Because those of you that are considering doing this, you will be able to reach, you will be able to inspire, you will be able to heal and help to reintegrate people that I never will be able to, because you're you, and you have a way, a unique gift, a unique skill set, a unique energetic vibe that just happens to resonate with others that I may not be able to reach and otherwise resonate with. So I believe the more the merrier. I believe that if you're coming from an authentic place, if you believe in authenticity, you're standing in your own truth and your own power, by all means, start writing a blog. And it starts with the basics. Start journaling if you haven't already done so. Folks, when you look back at the journal entries you've written, if you've been having the kind of experiences myself and my colleagues have, and you go back to journal entries you wrote years ago, those journal entries will speak to you. They will tell you a story. You may have written down a fragmented dream that didn't really make sense at the time. You just wrote it down early in the morning, sleep still in your eyes, in a shaky hand, barely legible, but you scrawled out, you know, a few sentences, maybe a paragraph, before you lost the dream entirely. And then years later, you're flipping through a journal, you're looking for something else, maybe you're looking for a phone number or something, and then you come across that journal entry, and then you read it, and it's like, wow, it's like a light goes on, and then, with the benefit of hindsight, and a lot of water under the bridge, and a lot of experiences, realizations, and perceptual changes since then, since you wrote that journal entry, man, it really makes sense now. So those of you that have stopped journaling for whatever reason, go back and read your journal entries, and you'll also get a good idea, because the journal entries, they're like guideposts, they're like signs along the way. They give you an idea, with the benefit of hindsight. We are stuck in this flat field linear time effect, you know, for the time being. I know some of you out there are jumping timelines and are time jumpers. That's a whole nother story. And it should be the subject of a whole nother topic of these commentaries. If I can get one or more of my friends that have these time jumping alternate reality timeline experiences, that'll be an interesting conversation. But as far as just this timeline is concerned, and taking into account the Mandela effect, all this other stuff. I just had another Mandela effect the other day, which I'll get into in a moment since we're on the subject. But your journals will serve as guideposts, signs along the way. You will look at them and say, wow, it's like, you know, my, how my thinking has changed so much in this regard, how much my perceptions have shifted in that regard, how much I've grown, right? How much I still need work in this, that, or the other aspect of my life. Controlling emotions, controlling feelings, getting a handle on our energy and, you know, the connection between our ego-mind interface and our physical body and what our physical body tells us. All those things, if you go back and you read your journal entries will speak to you, and they will be like signposts, guide markers, signs along the way, because we're all on a journey. It's not the destination, it's the journey. And if you haven't started a journal in the past, I encourage you to do so. Now, it helps. I have close friends and colleagues, and I share dreams with my partner constantly. Oh, what did you dream about last night? I dreamed about this. Oh, I don't really remember my dreams, right? But it helps to be able to bounce this stuff off back and forth with others. I think I mentioned this before in one of my previous podcasts or commentaries or interviews I'd given to other podcasters, but me, Eve Lorgan, a few of the old Dragon Slayers from the old days, Cassie. Cassie is a dear friend, my lad from Texas. Very soft-spoken, but, you know, very strong-willed, like so many Texas gals are. And we used to share dreams all the time, because in these dreams would be experiences, interdimensional experiences, astral dreamscape experiences, stage-managed dream experiences, reptilian and other entity intrusion experiences, MyLab experiences. And sometimes some of these MyLab experiences would be shared MyLab experiences, where like I would share, yeah, I had this dream, I was in a facility, you know, saw medical personnel, and then someone else would chime in these group emails we would do, other MyLabs, and they would say, you know what, I had the same dream, except I didn't see you there. I remember this, and that would trigger a memory in me. Yeah, I remember seeing something like that. I remember feeling something like that. A lot of it has to do with impressions and feelings, and that's why they work so hard to cut us off from our what our body's energetic body signature and the different layers of the energy fields around us, how we're we're made to disconnect and detach from all that and just get permanently in our headspace. So we don't feel what our body tells us. We don't feel what our heart center tells us. We don't feel energetically when we're reading someone's account of a dream they had the night before. Here's that Mandela effect that I went through recently. Some of you heard my recent commentary about the Task Force 160 in the Grenada invasion. There's specialist Army helicopter pilots that fly the Black Hawk helicopters that fly around so-called Tier 1 Special Forces, Delta Force, DEVGRU, so-called SEAL Team 6 is the Hollywood name. And how Task Force 160 was created as a direct result of the disaster when the Americans tried to rescue the hostages in Iran. They had Marine pilots flying in helicopters that were not suited for long-distance, low-level, nap-of-the-earth flying with night vision goggles and advanced avionics and advanced navigation systems. And Delta Force said, we're never going to fly with any other pilots, helicopter pilots, that don't know what they're doing, that don't have the can-do special forces mindset and don't have the right equipment, the right helicopters. So out of that, they created Task Force 160, based out of Fort Campbell, Kentucky, flying Black Hawk helicopters. You see this in the movie Black Hawk Down, where the helicopter pilots that were flying around Delta Force and the Army Rangers, and in truth, there were Air Force combat controllers there. There were Navy SEALs there. It was the hodgepodge of special forces units. But the helicopter pilots were part of what was originally known as Task Force 160. And I could have sworn they changed their name to the 1st Special Operations Aviation Regiment. In fact, I remember the CO at the time of the 1st Special Operations Aviation Regiment testifying before Congress, talking about a mission that his forces had been on. And then come to find out years later that they're called, they changed their name to 160th Special Operations Aviation Regiment. I did a double take when I read that. I had to do some research. I thought, okay, maybe there was a transitional phase. Maybe they started off being called Task Force 160, and then 1st Special Operations Aviation Regiment, then 160th Special Operations Aviation Regiment. But nowhere in the record can I find reference to the 1st Special Operations Aviation Regiment, 1st SOAR, S-O-A-R, based out of Fort Campbell, Kentucky. And so that to me is a Mandela moment because I could have swore they were called 1st SOAR. So if anyone out there in the Spec Ops community, anyone out there that researches this stuff the way I do, military special ops, black ops, etc., etc., if you have any information about that, please let me know because it's kind of it's irritating me. It's kind of like when I talked about my other Mandela effect moment with The Who in the 1982 tour. Oh, by the way, I talked with an old mate of mine from back in those days, and me and this guy used to plan our attendance at concerts, excuse me, like military operations, you know. We would show up to these big outdoor open-air stadium shows, the Day on the Greens in Oakland Stadium. We'd get there the night before at midnight, and you know, we would plan the whole thing out like a military operation. Anyway, I asked him to dig up his old photos from that Who concert, Saturday, October 23rd, 1982. I'll be interested to see if, A, he still has the photos, B, if he's got the photos, what the Who were dressed like, because I remember what they were dressed like. Because if the set list has changed, if certain songs, which I know they played, are not on any of the recordings that I could find on YouTube, which come from that tour, I'd be interested to know if their appearance has changed, too, insofar as their clothing is concerned. Anywho, Mandela effect moment indeed. Now, in the time I've got left in this first segment, and in the second segment, I'm going to talk a lot about kind of a rarity for me. I mean, in private discussions with people that I know are MyLabs, I've no qualms about sharing some of my MyLab experiences. I don't really talk about my MyLab experiences in such an open forum, but for our members today, I will. I have to do something to make up for the fact that we had to postpone and push Sandra Feck's interview back, you know, several days, and by extension, push Sashida's interview back and push Dr. Marischal Manyfeather's interview back. So, in lieu of that, myself and my colleague, Dean, next week we're going to have a discussion. It should be a very interesting one. We've been brainstorming some of the subject matter. And today, I will be talking about some of my lab experiences, my perceptions, my impressions, my memories, however fragmented, my dreams, however detailed or fragmented. I'll be talking more about that in the second half. Okay, now, in the time I have left in this first segment, I'm going to talk about a issue that's been raised by one of our dear listeners. I always, or oftentimes anyway, ask colleagues, friends, listeners, people whose insight and understanding of all this I value and respect, right? Because it is an interactive process we're going through. It's not, you know, us here at the Cosmic Switchboard, we're a bunch of big shots, and then there's everybody else, and, you know, we're the clearinghouse of, you know, all things, we're all knowing and all wise. No, we're not like that at all. We've had enough of that. We're changing that paradigm. Many times I've gone to a conference and a lecture, and some of these speakers are just so aloof and so detached and see themselves as so superior to the people who pay to sit and attend their lectures and pay all kinds of money for their workshops and their seminars. So we've never seen ourselves as being above and apart from our listeners, because we believe in the concept of unity, that we're all one. And so every once in a while, I'll ask friends, colleagues, listeners, yeah, what should I talk about in these commentaries? Because it's not only what's important to us here at the Switch, it's important to you, the listeners. What's important to you? What do you want to hear about? What is it that you would like more insight or at least another perspective on? Because again, you know, I'm not all-knowing, all-wise, omniscient. I'm just like any of you, right? So here's what one of my dear listeners sent me. We know that things are rapidly changing in the world, and the ripple effects will affect many of us. One topic he might touch on is what we as ordinary people can do to prepare for and survive the negative events that may occur, be they societal, environmental, or otherworldly. Let me read that again. We know that things are rapidly changing in the world, and the ripple effects will affect many of us. One topic he might touch on is what we as ordinary people can do to prepare for and survive the negative events that may occur, be they societal, environmental, or otherworldly. That is a very good question. It's always good to look at what the powers that be or what the powers that want to be are up to and are planning for, the contingencies they are planning for. When you look at, for example, the START II, I think the START II talk, Strategic Arms Limitation Treaty, and I think it was in the START II treaties when I think they were started during the Gerald Ford administration, if memory serves. One of the provisions in the START treaty, and I believe Richard Dolan writes about this in one of his books about UFOs in a national security state. In the wording of the START treaty, there is something to the effect of what both countries, the signatories, in this case it would be the then USSR and the United States, what they would do in the event of a technological like emergency or a technological event or something along those lines. And, you know, nowadays that could mean a lot of things. I mean, to mine, I think of those Transformer movies and I think of those movies with the giant robots that can change shape and do all kinds of things. I mean, you know, that's not beyond the realm of possibility, folks, with nanotech and all this other stuff that's going on and as far as advanced cybernetics and what these aliens could do. Carol was just talking about battling cyborgs, right? What appeared to be cyborgs. So the point of relevance is, if they will word into a treaty, and Richard Dolan and maybe others are perhaps suggesting that the technological, the mysterious technological issue that's being referred to in this missile treaty is what the strategic START is all about, is limiting the number of nuclear missiles, their throw weight, i.e., how much the rockets can carry as far as payload, whether the warheads are MIRVed or not, multiple independently targeted reentry vehicles, i.e., in the nose cone, there would be not just one nuclear warhead, but multiple nuclear warheads. That there's something called a bus within the nose cone that would drop off each one of these individual warheads on individual targets. So one aspect of the START treaty was to limit the number of MIRVed missiles, i.e. Multiple warheads in a missile, as well as the range of the missiles, the payload, the throw weight. All that was worded into the START treaties. But they also worded in this thing about what to do in the event of a technological incident, an unspecified technological incident. And Dolan and others postulated maybe they're referring to some kind of alien technological issue. Now, we know that in, what was it, 1992 Federal Fire Marshal's handbook, there was a chapter about crashed UFOs, the radiological dangers associated with crashed alien spacecraft, etc., etc. We know that according to some of the Majestic documents, so-called, that the father-son team of the Woods, Robert Woods, I believe his name is, and his son Ryan, or the other way around, in some of the documents that have been unearthed, which I have no reason to doubt, there are memos between Khrushchev and JFK, Jack Kennedy, where they talk about how it's important we don't confuse these mass flyovers of UFOs, of alien spacecraft, with first strike, either a nuclear missile strike or an air wing, air bombardment strike, right? I mean, think of General Thomas Powers, psychopath, and think about General Curtis LeMay, Strategic Air Command, and how they basically wanted to just nuke the whole Eurasian landmass. To find out more about that, read the book PSYOP, S-I-O-P, Single Integrated Operational Plan, which goes into detail about what these psychopaths came up with as far as, you know, gaming out World War III was concerned, and how they wanted to execute it, just by nuking, re-nuking, and triple-nuking cities, even small and medium-sized cities, over and over and over again. That's what kind of psychopaths these people are. But the point of relevance is that Khrushchev and Kennedy, in these memos and in these discussions they were having through intermediaries, wanted to make sure that a war would not erupt as a result of a misidentification of flying saucers, alien craft, etc., etc. If you read the memoirs of Dean Acheson, he was a crony of the late and unlamented Avril Harriman, known as the Crocodile within the State Department, right? Avril Harriman, his crony was Dean Acheson, Council on Foreign Relations. And in Acheson's memoirs, he talks about how, I think it was the Skull and Bonesman Secretary of Defense at the time, Robert Lovett. He was in the office with Lovett, and they were both concerned about a bunch of UFOs flying over the North Pole, right? And whether they should regard it as a preemptive strike by the Soviets, et cetera, et cetera. So they worded into these START treaties the possibility that a technological issue, technological devices, I think the term may have been, I have to read it again, that chapter in Dolan's book, as being a source of misidentification, which could result in a shooting war with the Russians, the Soviets, right? So if they're already working out these contingencies in case a misidentification of UFOs leads to a shooting war, that's something that we ought to take into account also, right? Because it goes back to what my dear listener said, we know that things are rapidly changing in the world and the ripple effects will affect many of us. One topic he might touch on is what we as ordinary people can do to prepare and survive the negative events that may occur, be they societal, environmental, or otherworldly. And I just talked about how in the Federal Fire Marshal's, I think, 1992 manual, there was a whole chapter devoted to crashed alien spacecraft and the inherent radiological dangers involved. And I just talked about how written into the START treaties and also the discussions, the secret discussions between Khrushchev and Kennedy. And it's been postulated and alleged that the reason the Red Hotline phone system was set up between the Soviet premier Khrushchev and his successors and Jack Kennedy and his successors in the Oval Office, why the Red Line was set up was precisely to ask each other, okay, we have a whole bunch of UFOs flying all over Western Europe right now. I just want to make sure that's not you guys, right? So it's quite possible that the whole Red Line hotline between the Soviet leaders, you can see this played out in the movie, which I recommend, the original movie, not the George Clooney version, but the original movie of Failsafe, which was an absolute classic about accidental nuclear war erupting. Anyway, Henry Fonda plays the president. Larry Hagman plays his Russian interpreter. And they're talking to the premier of the Soviet Union and his interpreter to try to avert what would become a nuclear war by accident, that was started accidentally, right? Okay, that's the hotline that I'm talking about. And it's quite possible that hotline was set up based on the information found in the documents that have been unearthed and also that have been leaked out by insiders on the inside, that Khrushchev and Kennedy wanted to make sure they didn't start World War III because of a misidentification of UFOs and aliens. And that's why it's important that we know the difference, okay? I know the difference between an alien spacecraft and a human spacecraft. At least if I'm underneath it, I'm standing beneath it, I have a very good idea, you know, what's man-made and what's not, right? I've stood beneath these large, I'd say 90 feet long triangles, slight electrostatic buzzing sound, large red lighted circle beneath, and in the corners would be large white circles. Sometimes they'd turn off one or two or all three of the circles in the corners, the lighted white circles in the corners, I guess to add some stealthiness to it, because sometimes these things are so quiet, if you didn't happen to look up, you wouldn't notice them, right? And I saw several of these in one night. And those, I'm convinced, happen to be man-made human ones. That's not to say that all triangular-shaped craft of any size, especially the large ones, the really large ones, are all man-made. No, I'm not saying that. I believe that a lot of the triangular craft, the very large ones, are alien craft, and even some of the smaller ones. But the triangular craft seems to be a commonality as far as these space-faring, interdimensional, time-hopping civilizations. It's just they happen to like the triangular shape, just as they happen to like the saucer shape. More than one civilization, many civilizations, like the saucer-shaped craft. So it's a knee-jerk assumption on the part of these pushing that meme that all triangular-shaped craft are man-made. I'm just pointing out that I stood beneath a man-made triangular craft, and I know the difference, right? I've seen a number of them in the Santa Clara Valley, San Jose, and I've seen a number of them in San Diego. So that's an example of being able to differentiate. Another thing about the otherworldly aspect, which my listener has an interest in knowing about, is that I'm one of those Mylabs who have been abducted and was presented with fake aliens, right? Me and this gal, she was cleared down in Houston, Texas. She's since passed away, sadly. And she was being trained by her military handlers, one of which was a human military officer, seemingly human military officer who can shapeshift into a reptilian military officer. And she was being trained in hostage rescue scenarios, storming airplanes and rescuing hostages or killing X-rays, i.e. terrorists, right? Tangos. And she would be trained in the art of room clearing, in the art of taking down jetliners that have been hijacked, presumably hijacked. I mean, we don't really know why she was being trained to storm these these airliners, because of all this staged hijacking that had gone on over the years. Some of them were real, but a lot of them were false flags also. Remember, all that stuff is a commonality. You have to think about 9/11, okay, the airliners being hijacked, et cetera, that automatically gets everyone involved in the world who travels on airplanes and goes to transportation hubs. And that's a way to lock everyone down as far as security is concerned. They go after something that unites the entire planet and then flip-flop that and make an excuse to clamp down from a security standpoint. And so who knows the real reason why this MyLab gal was being trained to storm airplanes. I mean, think of GSG-9 and two members of the British SAS that rescue the hostages in Mogadishu, right, in 77, I believe, October 77. And that was, to me, a false flag, totally a false flag. I mean, it was a real terrorist hostage-taking scenario, but, I mean, who knows who was really jerking the strings of the terrorist on board, a joint Palestinian-German terrorist group, go figure, right? Anyway, I was with this gal in this MyLab scenario. We were in a courtyard that was simulated to look like the courtyard of the two-story apartment complex I lived in. So I noticed the gal. She notices me. We don't say anything. We're trying to communicate telepathically. We're both kind of groggy because whatever drugs they, you know, injected into us. And then off to the side, there's a number of people there in their night clothes, and they're just in zombie mode, right? And I've been there, folks. People have said, oh, I had a MyLab experience. You were there, but you were all zombied out. You didn't hear me. You couldn't see me waving my hand in front of you. You were out of it. And that happens, right? And so I look over, and then there's these zombied out MyLabs there, presumably MyLabs, or they could have just plucked them out of their beds and used them in this experiment. Who knows? Then what happened was they paraded a couple of there were probably children dressed in gray uniforms, gray costumes, rather. And they had them kind of walk, you know, kind of robotically and stiffly around us, but they couldn't do a really good job about the stiff robotic part, right? Because you could still see, you know, definition of movement. Everyone has a unique gait, folks. Intelligence security services the world over teaches, and now overhead imagery, CCTV, all of that is calibrated nowadays to track people's gait, because people may wear a disguise, put on a beard, put on hats, put on a hoodie, but their gait will give them away. So a lot of, you know, field operatives these days are trained to put a coin or something into their in their shoes so it alters their gait slightly, right? And so a trained operative that's tailing them will lose them if they're walking differently, right? And also, like I said, a lot of the CCTV and a lot of the surveillance systems nowadays can track people based on their gait, single them out in a crowd. It's a form of biometrics nowadays. And so point of relevance is that these little kids walking around or someone little trying to be all robotic-like, but their gait was giving them away. There were humans that were inside these gray costumes. And then me and the gal looked at each other and kind of raised an eyebrow at each other and said, okay, this is fishy. This is dumb. They're trying to make us think we're being abducted. And then we had a debrief about it the next morning, and I called her up on the phone, and we talked about that experience. She remembered it. She remembered me. I remembered her. And we both agreed it was a means to an attempt to make us think we were being abducted by aliens when we were not. And they tried this on other friends of mine, Lorena, who I'll get on the show. They tried to make her think that she was seeing a reptilian, which is a joke because she's had a lot of reptilian experiences. She knows the difference between a real rep and a fake rep. They also did it to other people I know. Leah Haley remembers a time she was lined up with a bunch of other abductees or MyLabs or maybe even people they plucked off out of their beds. Who knows? But she was in a slightly altered state, looked down at what was supposedly a gray, and then she noticed that she could see the stitching around the eye socket that was holding the black eye pieces in place. So she looked down and saw the stitching. Uh-oh, she said to herself, this is not a gray. They're trying to make her think that it was an abduction. And in the event, now that I'm on the subject, later on, And Leah won't mind me saying this. Leah and I are dear friends. Blessings to her, wherever she may be. Haven't talked to her in ages. But she's one of those people that did a flip-flop. I mean, she knew that she was having all these alien abduction encounters with several different types of ETs she was encountering, including reptilians. And as well, the military were involved in her life, too. But she was manipulated over time to believe that it was all military and no aliens. And part of that 180 may have been this experience I just described, where she looked down and saw the stitching around the black eyepiece. It was intended to make her think that she was being abducted by aliens when, of course, it wasn't, right? It's just a psyop, folks. But this is relevant because how do we know if it's a worldly? The thing about it is, ultimately, even if the human so-called, the human military does some big stunt like 9/11, ultimately that's all in pursuance of this alien agenda, of this non-human reptilian Draco Archon agenda. Always remember that, okay? That, at least from my perspective, you don't have to take that on. But I believe that there's a non-human intelligence driving everything we're seeing on the surface insofar as the New World Order is concerned, the Illuminati, so-called. So heightened perception, heightened awareness, heightened consciousness is all key behind figuring this out. Because if you know, okay, maybe this is not an alien vehicle that's in front of me, maybe it's a military vehicle, then you can regard it differently. With the understanding that a lot of the deep black military aerospace MyLab controllers are themselves in cahoots with aliens, too. It's a mixed bag, folks. It's not one or another thing. There's a lot of gray mixed in. So keep that point in mind, because we're rapidly reaching a point, and we've already actually reached it, as far as I'm concerned, where the twain have met. The deep black weird science sub rosa stuff has fully merged with what's going on the surface. Environmentally, this is another question, another issue that was raised by our listener. We know that there's terraforming going on. Fukushima, the Gulf Horizon oil platform, not just one platform, many, and then they compound it deliberately by the core exit to further pollute the Gulf of Mexico and all the water, you know, all the seaways and oceans that the Gulf of Mexico, of course, is connected to, because it's just one planet, right? So Fukushima, you have all the leaky nuclear plants all over the place. The dead zone in the Pacific because of Fukushima. We have to come to grips with the fact that the planet is being terraformed right before our eyes. The radiation, the background radiation, is not going to benefit us. It's going to benefit those that have this reptilian Draco dominant genetic profile, right? There's an overabundance of reptilian DNA. It's going to change and morph them in ways that, you know, we can hardly imagine. And these are just, a lot of these are just minions and foot soldiers anyway, the shock troops of the reptilian hybrid plantation managers of this planet. They don't care if their minions, their hybrid minions, die off of cancer, you know, down the track. It's like they, you know, they would have outlived their usefulness anyway. But if the radiation can engender certain changes within large swaths of the population, many of whom have a higher than normal reptilian DNA count, let's say, if you will, like a blood count, white cell count, DNA, reptilian DNA count, well, that only benefits the reptilian agenda. So what we need to do is buff ourselves, strengthen ourselves, iodine. If we can get good natural sources of iodine, right, that will protect our hypothalamus, our thyroid gland, especially our thyroid gland, and prevent us from getting radiation sickness, prevent us from absorbing too many like beta emitters and whatnot that will radically sicken us and, you know, alter our DNA, et cetera, et cetera. The Japanese, you know, if you can find good miso that hasn't been contaminated by Fukushima, right, ironically, that is a very good source of natural iodine. Also, I used to get this brown seaweed from northern Japanese, northern Pacific waters. I no longer do because of the problem with Fukushima, but I've heard that the company that specializes in this brown seaweed, Modafinilin, I think they're called, they've since been harvesting brown seaweed in off the shores of New Zealand, right? So you take that under advisement. It's still the same ocean, Pacific Ocean. But the prevailing currents take a lot of the radiation to, unfortunately, the west coast of the U.S. and Canada. And that accounts for the dead zone there offshore of the west coast. So many, you know, marine mammals and marine life has just been killed or mutated, sadly. And that's another reason why this is not a human, purely human agenda, folks. It's just, you know, what an evil person would not destroy their own environment that they live in. Okay, keep that point in mind, right? The radiation and the chemtrailing, everything else, it benefits these beings. It doesn't benefit us. Now, I do believe there's a race on because the photonic energy and the intensified cosmic rays and gamma rays, which are getting past the perma-chemtrail haze barrier and the heart barrier that's being put up and other frequencies. And increasingly, this 5 gigahertz electromagnetic smog, right? Well, those intense cosmic rays are still getting through, and they're still activating a higher center. So every chance we get when the sun is out, definitely get outside, right? Roll your sleeves up, wear a tank top, a singlet, as they say in the UK or Australia, right? You know, go out there and get in your shorts, get in your swimsuit, and absorb up and soak up these rays, because it'll buff up and boost your immune system, and it'll also activate your higher centers. Meditation works, energization works. In one of these shows, I'll talk about the Bruno Gröning technique of Einstellen. It's a German technique by a German mystical healer who healed many people until he was shut down by the Americans and the German authorities post-World War II. Right? Can't have that. Can't have one guy healing thousands of people. Oh, can't have that. It's bad, right? It's not good for the public, right? So I'll talk more about the Bruno Gröning Einstellen cosmic healing waves technique. And what we could do is we could look at what's going on the surface as a perfect barometer of this intermingling between the deep black weird science sub rosa secret society stuff mingling with the Hillary versus Trump, the social justice warriors with the expansion of all these wars. Now they're going into Yemen in earnest. They're igniting Somalia again. And they've been in these places for years now, folks, but a lot of it has been CIA, you know, paramilitary, CIA drone attacks, JSOC, Joint Special Operations Command, doing special ops and Tomahawk missile strikes from offshore naval vessels against targets in Yemen. That kind of stuff had been going on for a while. It really intensified under the Obama administration, right? Where were the social justice warriors then, right? But now it's just taken on a whole new level of emphasis. And we just have to hope that you know, there are elements inside administration that are reaching out to their counterparts in Russia and elsewhere that want to forestall all this madness, because what these wars are doing is not only that they're providing this negative louche to all these archontic forces and, you know, denuding the surface population of human beings and destroying the environment and destroying wildlife, it all factors in, but it's leading up to what may be coming down the pike. Because, again, the powers that be know about these celestially driven cataclysms. So they're working towards a timetable. And so that's why they want to ramp up all these wars. And then all the parallel security that goes along with it and the parallel medical mafia stuff, the mandatory vaccinations, and et cetera, et cetera. It's too easy to envision some so-called terrorist organization unleashing some pathogen or something, some kind of justification. Think of the mad cow disease when they wiped out, basically destroyed the British cattle industry because they just up and said, okay, you know, mad cow disease, never mind that it probably came from Porton Down, the British Germ Warfare Center, right? So they went out and wiped out all these cows, right, and these beef cattle. Poor animals were going to be slaughtered anyway, but, you know, but the justification to stop the spread of mad cow disease, that wasn't enough. Then they made up this thing called mad sheep disease so they can wipe out all the sheep in America and other places under the same kind of pretext. So everything is a justification. Everything is a pretext. So that's another reason why we got to buff up our immune systems, right? I have a Rife machine. Familiarize yourself with electromedicine. The Bob Beck Protocol, the Bob Beck Protocol. Look into MMS, the mineral, the miracle mineral. Colloidal silver, you can go out and buy yourself a good colloidal silver generator. See, the idea is not to be fear-based, but just to be able to deal with any contingency, any eventuality. Remember, a lot of these Mylabs are trained to survive these various contingencies. And likewise, these surface-level military units, they're trained to survive a nuclear, biological, chemical environment. Now, they won't survive it for that long, but they're trained to operate in it, right? So keep that point in mind. Also, keep your eyes out for things like FOX units driving around. FOX units are these armored, mobile, chemical, biological warfare labs that they have sensors that and filters that detect samples of the soil, of the air samples. They go into nuclear, biological, radiological, chemical environments or suspected environments, and they have the sniffers and the sensors and the filters to take samples and analyze them, right? So look that up, FOX units. They're made by a German manufacturer. So if you see all these FOX units driving around your area, take note of that. But we are solutions-oriented here, and you've heard me say this over and over again. It sounds redundant, but it's not. We need to surround ourselves with a bubble of harmony, a bubble of organic centeredness that connects us to organic source. And nowadays, it's like, okay, we can do a sit rep on what's going on in the surface world and how it, you know, melds in with what's going on in the subsurface world and the weird science world. But all one has to do is take a quick glance at InfoWars and not take it on board. Just read the headlines. You get an idea of what's, and also the lamestream media. Check it out. You know, just look at the headlines. Don't take it all on board. You don't have to read the articles because it has an energetic signature all its own anyway, which is designed to all, you know, manipulate with your energy fields. We were talking earlier about energy manipulation and bodily energetic manipulation. Create this bubble around yourself. So all this stuff is like water off a duck's back. And, you know, you got to become self-sufficient in all things. We need to network with just the right people. And we have to learn to let go, folks, because some of those people that you still regard as close family and friends, when the heat is on, they'll be the first to denounce you to the authorities if there's like rationing, forced confiscation. If the emergency orders are enacted, executive orders, and they start confiscating, you know, food and weapons and vehicles and everything else, you know, some of these people you call family and friends, they're going to be the first to, you know, inform on you because they want to be patted on the head and they want to be, you know, given like a meal ready to eat or something, right? They want to be rewarded. And so they'll be the first to turn snitch. So now more than ever, make sure that the people around you are people that you trust, the people you want standing in the shield wall with you, people that you want in the trenches with you, right? Because we're just getting started. Well, this is the march. We're on the march. Once we get there, once things, you know, there's a little more clarity, then we can say, ah, okay, well, I'll revert to all these contingency plans, plan A, plan B, plan C, right? And I encourage you to do that. Put yourself in the best possible position geographically, emotionally, spiritually, energetically. Make sure that you associate with the right people, too. That's important. And network with the right people. And don't get pulled into all these Facebook wars and whatnot and these text wars and these internet wars and all that stuff. Leave that for others. Yeah. One thing that has to be understood is, and this was pointed out to me by a few friends, and I'll leave this segment with this point, and then I'll do the segment about my MyLab experiences. We have to start looking at this, all of this, from a higher dimensional perspective. Yes, recognize the persecution, the oppression, the tyranny, the injustice, but don't take it on board. You're an operator. You're here for a reason, okay? You didn't take on this assignment because it was going to be easy, and there may have been a lot of volunteers, may not have been a lot of volunteers, but for whatever reason, you decided and your oversoul decided, and the spiritual powers of the benevolent sort in multiple higher planes of existence thought you were made of, quote, the right stuff, and that's why you're here. So we must start looking at all this from a higher dimensional perspective. There are people out there, Marichelle was talking about this in the interview I did with her, they keep putting up pictures of, like, animals being, you know, mutilated, of children being harmed. You know, it's okay to be aware of this stuff. But when you keep putting out pictures, or someone keeps putting out pictures of animal cruelty, of this, that, and the other, it's such a low, dense, negative vibe, right? That's not looking at it from a higher dimensional perspective. Yes, pedophilia goes on all over the place. Yes, definitely, every once in a while, put out posts on Facebook just reminding people that this is what's going on, right? But don't make it a constant stream of negativity, not just about pedophilia, but about anything else. Mix it up. Put, like, joyful videos. Put, like, happy videos. Put jokes up. Put, funny animal videos. Things that people are criticized for. Oh, you people, you know, you're part of the Matrix because you put out funny videos and you put out comedy videos and you put out videos of animals. No, to heck with all that. Put up things that'll lift the vibe of your newsfeed, right? Remember, your newsfeed is an extension of you. We don't want it to be an extension of the AI. We want it to be an organic extension of us. And so we don't want to give people the impression that all we do is dwell on negative things. That gives them the impression that we just wallow in a pity party, and that we're defeatist and we're pessimists, and that we feel that there's absolutely no hope. Actually, quite the opposite is true. People with a higher dimensional perspective know that we are finally starting to turn the tables. The energetic shift, the tide has turned in our favor. Finally. Anyhow, that's the end of the first segment, and we'll be seeing you at the top of the next hour, where I'll be talking about my MyLab experiences. So you've been listening to the first segment of Bartley's Commentaries on the Cosmic Wars, and stay tuned for the next segment, dear members.